Welcome to episode 23 of the Detox Dilemma podcast. Today is one of those bucket list days for me. I have the host of the Why Did I Get Cancer podcast, Deborah, here with me. Well, she's virtually with me. As a breast cancer survivor, she set out on a mission and created her podcast to talk to the world's leading experts to find out, why did I get cancer? Her show is amazing. It's eye-opening, it's insightful, and it's honest. And this interview was no different. We laughed and we cried and we talked about the things that really matter. So please welcome to the show, my friend, Deborah. Hey there, my name is Wendy and I'm an environmental toxins lawyer who is obsessed with showing women how to toss the toxins out of their life and embrace a more holistic lifestyle. I'll be dishing up bite-sized but binge-worthy episodes on all things detox, low toxin. What's that toxin? And what is it really doing to my health? I'm breaking it all down for you, separating the myths from the facts and pulling back the curtain on the products and beauty industry. You'll hear my unfiltered and sometimes unpopular, but honest opinions. No topic is off limits. We'll dive into what's really causing our thyroid issues, hormone imbalances, infertility, and more. Think of it as a crash course for all things holistic living, but for real life. You don't have to do everything. You just have to start somewhere. Let me show you how. This is the Detox Dilemma podcast. Well, welcome to the show, Deborah. I'm so excited to have you here.
Oh my gosh, I'm so excited to be here.
And I'm on video for the first time because you encouraged me when I was on your podcast to be on video. So I'm actually, you know, I have clothes on that are not pajamas.
Nice. Well, I have clothes on the top and then I've got pajamas on the bottom. And flip-flops. So we're keeping it real.
I love it. Keeping it real. So I am really excited about this interview. You had me on your podcast, the Why Did I Get Cancer podcast. Mm-hmm. And it was fantastic. And so when I reached out and asked you to come on, I was stoked that you immediately said yes. So super happy you're here. And I would really love if you could tell my audience kind of who you are and what your history is. And what was the story that brought you to creating your podcast?
Yes. Okay. So the podcast is Why Did I Get Cancer, as you already mentioned. And I had cancer. I had breast cancer. I was diagnosed September 1st of 2020, as if anything else could go wrong in 2020. And I shouldn't have gotten cancer, you know, based on my lifestyle and my family history and my attitude and my outlook. I'm a certified nutritionist. I'm a college athlete. I ran 5 half marathons. I do hot yoga. I mean, I did all of the things. I have eaten organic and non-GMO my entire life.
Oh, wow. Really?
I mean, I grew up on a farm. So
way ahead of your time.
I also probably 25 years ago said, oh, shoot, mercury amalgams. I don't want that in my mouth. There's aluminum in deodorant. I don't want that in my armpits. So I did all those things. How did I get cancer? Like, that makes absolutely zero sense. And so when I got the call from the oncologist who said, hey, so sorry, you have breast cancer. I just said, I don't. And I dropped the phone and went for a walk because I was just like, this is crap. There's no way I could possibly have cancer. I didn't eat the hamburgers. I got the organic chicken salad my whole life. Like, how is this possible?
How old were you?
56.
Okay.
56. So, you know, I was just really perplexed. I was seeking answers. I was mad as heck about it. I felt like my body had betrayed me. I felt like my career was a joke because I've been telling people for 30 years, I've been in health and wellness, 30 years telling people how to avoid chronic diseases and cancer. And here I am, the new poster child of breast cancer. So after I went through treatment, which was 4 surgeries in about 6 months, which took a massive toll on my body, I said to my oncologist, I said, this isn't right. Why did this happen? And she said, well, you're a woman and you have breasts. And I thought, you know what? That's not enough. I need a better answer. So I was just on my knees one day, like, God, what is next in my life? I'm exhausted and I don't want to work anymore. I just want to crawl into my bed and read romance novels.
I love that. I just read fantasy novels, anything to escape.
Everybody else's life, but mine. I just didn't want to deal with it. And I felt this still small voice inside say, go look up the website. Why did I get cancer? And I thought, well, now there's a great idea, because that's what I've been asking for the last 8 months. And I did a Google search and the URL was still available, which to me is just a crazy story. How could, with Big Pharma, as big as it is, how did nobody ever buy the website, Why Did I Get Cancer?
Blows my mind.
It still blows my mind. Whenever I'm having a bad day or a grumpy day, I just think back to God's goodness in that moment, directing my steps to, honestly, what is a brand new career? So bought the website, and about 2 months later, started this crazy podcast and this crazy podcast journey. And my goal is always to find guests who would give me information I wish I would have had 25 years ago.
I love that. And I have listened to every single episode of your podcast.
God bless you, honey. Thank you.
You know, I think what I love the most about it is you are so relatable, because you are so many people's story. And, you know, breast cancer affects 1 in 8 women in their lifetime. And the number of people under 40, 45 is only 11%, but that number is growing. And I have so many people in my life that have had breast cancer, roughly same age, you know, early 50s, late 50s. It's something that touches everyone, every family, moms, kids, right? This is a story that people are, it's normalized, frankly. It's a normal thing because it's everywhere. And what I love the most about your podcast is that you went looking for answers, and you would think that oncologists would be the ones that would be able to sit you down and say, listen, these are the things that increase your risk of breast cancer, because we know 5 to 10% are genetic.
Right.
The rest are all environmental and lifestyle. And so you would think that oncologists, the people who treat cancer, they would be the ones to sit patients down and say, these are the things that are really important that can decrease your risk of getting it again. And we know, because we know the things, we don't know all the things, but we know a lot of the things that can contribute. How does it make you feel that the people who are in the cancer field don't seem to want to be talking about prevention? We kind of have this culture, even Breast Cancer Awareness Month pisses me off to no fucking end, because like you have chicken wings and perfumes full of ingredients that are known to increase your risk of cancer, and they slap a pink ribbon on it and they're like, help us cure cancer. And I just want to be like, screw you. This should be Cancer Prevention Month, because the more we can prevent, the more lives we can help. And so how did that all make you feel when you were kind of coming out the end of all of your treatment?
Yeah. You know, I feel like I was just a number. I mean, I got great care, but I was just a number, and I just walked into being part of Big Pharma. And there is not money in a cure. There's only money in treatment. So why would there be a cure for cancer? I mean, there's too many forces fighting against it. Now, this is my opinion, although I have spoken to a few people on my podcast, and sometimes we have to do it offline because we will get censored by YouTube. But the deal is that there is no money in a cure. And so we really have to take it upon ourselves to do our own due diligence, because we're not going to be told the truth.
Yeah, I believe that firmly.
Yeah. And so I still continue to be mad about, well, look, I'm going to manage my madness, because that's not doing me any favors. So now I fight, and I fight with lots of different weapons. But, you know, one of the things that really fries me is, why are there no women of color in breast cancer studies? Very few women of color.
Yep. It's super biased.
It's super biased. And so how are we helping our sisters to prevent cancer. And you're right, the pink washing, as it's called, in October with Breast Cancer Awareness Month, when it should be Breast Cancer Prevention Month. Let's educate people. You know, look at the, like you said, the crappy food that these labels are on. And so people are not reading labels. They're starting to be better. After 30 years in this field, I can say people are, I love walking into Costco and seeing people do this, looking at labels. I want to go up and say, can I help you? But I see people reading labels, which is great. But for the most part, you know, we see an American Heart Association label. We mm-hmm. see a breast cancer label and we buy it because these people are doing good things for us, right? They have our best interests in mind. I fell for it too. I was on the board of directors of American Heart Association.
Oh, you were?
Yes. And I would go into my local supermarket and I'd see these American Heart Association labels on cereal that were 30% sugar. 30% sugar. Sugar is highly inflammatory. This is not doing anybody with heart disease any favor. I have a lot of heart disease in my family. My father died of heart disease. My mom has heart disease. These are not the foods I would tell them to buy. So that is a kind of a long answer to your question.
Not really long, because we could probably talk about that for like 3 hours.
We could probably talk about it. Yeah, no kidding. Let's do a Joe Rogan on that.
Yeah.
But for the most part, we just have to realize that we have to take care of ourselves. We have to educate. And as much as a pain in the ass it is to say, I've got to allow an extra 30 minutes to go to the supermarket this week so I can read labels, you got to do it, because big pharma and grocery stores and food manufacturers, they do not have your best interests in mind.
I think that's the hardest thing about my business, and I know I'm sure your business as well, is there's kind of this underlying belief that Americans have and trust in the government that I see and I hear all the time. And it's hard to overcome because we people really do believe the government would never allow that to happen. I can't tell you how many times I have been told, you know, I'll do a video and say, listen, this is what is in your fragrance. It will eventually cause hormone imbalance, which will lead to infertility, which will lead to breast cancer. And people literally say to me, that can't be true. Right. That there's no way, like the government would never allow that to happen. And right. It's hard to be in the system because I'm in the regulatory system. I see everything that happens behind closed doors. I see the lobbyists that show up, that give the money to the politicians, that change the policy that is built on profit for corporations. And then I see the regulatory capture that happens, where there's so much money flooding into regulatory agencies that they basically just become puppets for corporations. And it's hard for people to believe that. So when you're trying to teach somebody, hey, that box of cereal that says it's heart healthy mm-hmm. is crap, but why would it say heart healthy? Somebody had to approve that. No, right. Nobody approved it. Or Dreft. Oh my God. When I did a reel about Dreft being one of the most toxic laundry detergents on the shelf and gave the list of all the toxins, people were like, but it's pediatrician approved. And I said, you only need one pediatrician right. to agree to say that it's good in order to slap that bullshit label on that bottle. And people are like, no, that can't be true, because they don't want it to be
true.
They
don't want it to be true. They really doubled down on believing that people are good, which yeah. listen, I have doubled down on that. But when people show you who they are, you need to believe them the first time. And so when you see these labels, you just have to say, light bulb moment, they do not have my best interest in mind. And I fall for it too. I was at maybe Ulta or Sephora or something last summer looking for a non-toxic sunscreen. And I saw one that said vegan, not tested on animals. So I bought it.
Cruelty free.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought, well, if they care that much, they care about animals like I care about animals, they have to be good people. No. It was just like, I got home and I read through the ingredients and I thought, crap, I'm taking this back. And I'm going to tell them, like, look, you shouldn't have this product in here.
Yeah.
It did me good.
But Sephora doesn't like me because they have their I forget what they call it. Their clean list, or
they do have a clean section.
A clean section. And I have done a full review of their clean section. And some of it's clean. There are a couple brands that they carry that do carry things that meet my definition of clean. And everyone has their own definition of what clean means. I have my own. I'm very clear about what mine is and what my standards are. And a lot of them don't even come close. But because, you know, they are what you said, they're cruelty-free, they're vegan, mm-hmm. they're, you know, maybe they don't have any fragrance or like there's something that's missing that's really bad. And because it doesn't have that one thing, then they call it clean. But yeah.
Oh boy. Well, you know, I hate to say it, that I think I might have fallen for that recently at Sephora. Shoot.
Lots of people do. It's why I do what I do and why I just recently started going into stores and doing reviews and videoing myself and showing people labels to try to teach them how to read them themselves. And I'm so afraid of getting yelled at and kicked out of stores. But I feel like that practicality of showing somebody here's what to look for and here's what it looks like on the label is priceless.
It really is. You're right. And again, people, we're all busy, right? We're all addicted to busyness, which that's a whole other podcast. But we need to give people practical examples. And that's one of the things when I give a lecture, I have my entire Trader Joe's shopping list out. And here's this. I buy this because people want it easy. And I get that. We're all busy. So we got to make it easy for people to make quick decisions.
Yep. Easier the better. And our, you know, people's attention span, you get like, you know what, 12 seconds to get somebody's attention nowadays. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the TikTok, Instagram world. So.
Okay. So you've interviewed over 40 people. I counted. I think you have like 43 episodes up on your podcast right now. Is there one or two that really, and I'm going to tell you which ones really stuck out to me and I'm going to ask you about them because I totally anticipate you've remembered all 40 of your. Let me ask you a question. Would you love to know how to read a label without being super confused about what ingredients you should be avoiding and which ones are clean? If you said yes, listen up. This is for you. I remember being that person standing in aisles at Target trying to read labels, and back then I had zero idea what I was looking for. I didn't know what a preservative was or an ethoxylated ingredient. It was all like reading a foreign language. But now that I'm a savvy label reader, I wanted to create a simple way to teach you how to read labels without being overwhelmed. That's why I created a resource I know you are going to love. It's a list of my top 25 toxins to avoid and my simple 3-step hack for reading labels. It's not just any hack. It's the exact same method that I use every single day to review products and read labels, and it's the same process I teach all of my students. With these 3 steps and a little bit of practice, you'll be able to tell within 90 seconds if a product is clean or not. I personally believe that everyone should have this skill. You can't be fooled by greenwashing and fancy marketing when you know how to look for ingredients you want to avoid. So whether you're just starting out on this toxin-free journey or you're a seasoned pro, this information is so valuable. And here's the best part. It's completely free. Just head over to www.toxinstoavoid.com. That's www.toxinstoavoid.com. Grab your download and start reading labels like a pro today.
You know, I have a pretty good memory, but let's see.
Is there one or two that you did that at the end of the interview you thought, wow, I wish, I mean, I'm sure all of them to some extent, you had that feeling, but are there any that really stand out to you as being important and impacting you differently?
Yes. And when I think about that question, what I think about is what kind of information do I re-quote to people and say, oh my gosh, I had this guest on and they told me this. So there's 2 podcasts, both with physicians. One is Dr. Kelly Blodgett, who's a holistic dental practitioner. And he's in Portland, Oregon, so he's not too far from me. And then the other one was Dr. Lee Erin Keneally, who wrote The Cancer Revolution. And she has the most amazing cancer clinic in Orange County, California. She is doing such amazing work. I mean, they have thousands of people through the doors every year. And then she does a webinar every Tuesday. And so she's just also super generous with her information that she's gleaning. So those are probably the 2 that I reflect on all the time. And they're also the two that probably really moved me into action and also made me really angry.
Yeah, that seems to go together, right?
It really
you have
does.
To kind of be mad before you actually do something.
It's true.
So I will link to all of the episodes that you just mentioned and also okay. some of my favorites that I'm about to ask you about so people can find it. I think people should listen to every episode that you have done, but I'll specifically link the ones that are important to you and are important to me. And actually, the one with Dr. Blodgett is one that was hugely eye-opening to me. And while I do consider myself progressively holistic, that's kind of like what I've coined myself, I do fall very middle of the road and I really want science. I really want research articles. I think that, you know, as much as we need the holistic community talking about whole body health, I do think there are extremes happening on both sides of that fence. And so I just always like, show me the data.
Yeah.
Show me the data. I want to be able to look at it, read it, review it. I want to know who paid for it. I want to know who reviewed it. I want to know all the things. And I think that's just the lawyer in me. The critical thinking is like, just pounded into me for years in school. The one you did with Dr. Blodgett, the holistic dentist, and sometimes people call them biodentist, and depending on where they're practicing, they're called different things. But I have heard this, what I thought was kind of an old wives' tale about root canals. And I actually had multiple women that I know personally who got breast cancer. And I started asking them, do you have a root canal? And what side of your mouth is your root canal on? And I cannot tell you how many people who had like, you know, breast cancer or tumor on the right, they had a root canal on the right. And it just kept happening over and over and over again. And so I have dug into the data and there is research on this. And listening to Dr. Blodgett talk about it was super eye-opening. I don't think people realize this is a thing at all, that mouth, oral health. What did you think about that episode?
Yeah, I mean, it blew me away for a variety of reasons, but our gut biome actually does start in our mouth. And our gut biome is in charge of our immune system. It's in charge of whether or not we get cancer and inflammation and diabetes. And so if you've got a healthy gut, you really are in pretty darn good shape. But it does start in the mouth. And so when we were talking about things like fluoride, I mean, some of his information on fluoride, goodness gracious, there's a couple of movies that I think I cited it in my show notes, some movies to watch about fluoride.
Yeah, some documentaries.
Yes, which were fascinating. I wish I could remember the names right now. But then when we started discussing root canals, which I've never had one, but I've got plenty of people in my family who have, and I've read the data about how the root canal, it's basically a dead tooth that you're just leaving there. When something dead, as it continues its decay, it's massively inflammatory, and it involves so many other structures that now become inflamed, which influences your lymphatic flow and drainage. And if you see a thermography, which is basically a thermal image, a heated, you know, of what that looks like, and you can see how the drainage has been impacted.
Yeah, I've seen it for myself.
Yeah, it's fascinating. So there's got to be a better way. And then we had such an interesting discussion about amalgams. Now, I was early in the amalgam game as far as getting them out, probably.
You mean the mercury fillings for people who don't know what an amalgam is?
Yes. So I had my private practice and I was near Berkeley, California. And, you know, all cool things and crazy things start in Berkeley. And so I had gone to some sort of, you know, alternative health, holistic, you know, dance to the light of the moon seminar probably, and came home and thought, oh my gosh, I have probably 7 or 8 mercury amalgams fillings in my mouth. And I said to my dentist, who happened to be good friends of mine, I said, get these out. And they were like, why? They're in perfectly good shape. And I said, then explain to me why when the mercury comes to your office, it's basically in a hazmat kit. You have to suit up to put it in my mouth. And then wham, bam, it's like okay for me to have that in my mouth while I'm chewing and chomping, grinding my teeth at night and eating really hot food. No, take it out. So I was early with that. And we had such an interesting, Dr. Blodgett and I had such an interesting conversation. And the saddest thing about all of that to me is that to this day, people are still getting mercury fillings.
Yeah, it's still legal.
Yeah, it's still legal. And where it's really happening, and in areas where it's low income.
Yep.
Because it's cheap.
Yep, it's cheap. It's cheap. Cheaper way to do it.
It's really cheap.
I think people have it's hard to wrap your head around why these things are allowed. And the ability to ban things, regulate things in America, even in places like dentistry, it's really hard. Like there is some company out there that is making these, that is making a profit off of them, that is ensuring that they can continue to sell them. And that's just the bottom line. But putting mercury in your mouth, I mean, it takes a whole lot of cognitive dissonance to not see that as a huge health problem.
Exactly right. And then how about, you know, the dentists who are actually doing this? Speak up. You're supposed to be doing no harm. And how can you, in clear conscience, be putting this into somebody's mouth because A, they don't question, or B, it's a free dental visit because they are in a low income
yep.
area.
Yeah. And fluoride's the same way. I have a lot of friends who are dentists who now know all about fluoride because I handed them massive amounts of literature about it. And even when I moved to Europe, when I tell people, we're one of the only countries in the world that fluorinates their water. Mm-hmm. Like, why do you think, like, are we healthier? No, we are not healthier. And I have had some conversations with dentists where they tell me when they went to dentistry school, they didn't learn about the history of fluoride. They didn't learn about the research on fluoride. All they learned was use fluoride.
Right.
And, you know, there wasn't an education on the background of fluoride that all of my friends who have stopped using it, have stopped telling their patients to do it. There's so many better things out there now mm-hmm. that are healthier, that work just as well. It was because they did their own research and because I harassed them about it. But, you know, they had to go outside of their system to educate themselves on how bad fluoride really is.
Yeah, which is also just a testament to how poor our healthcare system is that, again, we're all addicted to busyness. They're physicians. They've got a lot of student loans probably to pay off, and they are just trying to get as many people into their office as possible, and they don't have time.
They really don't.
They really don't, to do the research. And they get the pharmaceutical salesperson comes in and says, hey, this is great, blah, 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 do this. And they probably don't have time to research it.
Yeah. And they're fighting with insurance companies and they get there maybe 7 minutes. Yeah, no, I totally, our entire system needs an overhaul.
It does. And this is why, again, we have to go back to ourselves and do our own due diligence. And after that interview with Dr. Blodgett, I had a dental appointment and they said, time for x-rays. And I said, why? Why do I need x-rays? And we went through this whole conversation. And finally, the dental hygienist said, yeah, you know, you probably only need to do these X amount of times every couple of years. I said, great, then let's just do that. But I think once a year or once every 6 months is ridiculous.
And they get paid, you know,
they get paid.
Charge
and
for
it's,
it. It's right. Part of, yeah.
Right. And then there's always I always say, that's a lot of radiation that's going to be around my head. Oh no, the government has deemed it a safe level. Have they? Really? That's wonderful.
That instills so much confidence.
Yes, I really believe my government.
As somebody who works for the government, I'm like, hey, and? Where's the and on that?
Okay. Show me the data.
Okay, so some other episodes that really impacted me. 21 and 19, and again, I'll link all of these.
Yeah.
You had a handful that kind of in my mind went together. And one was on fear,
mm-hmm.
and one was on stress, and then emotional release. And I kind of look at those things in as a whole, really.
Yeah.
And the core of that is emotions that we store in our body that we do not process become disease. And I believe this firmly. If you look at even the allopathic medical community data, they even will tell you stress. Mm-hmm. I mean, stress is the master toxin. In fact, I'm so passionate about managing stress and managing your nervous system that I tell people on the internet all the time, if the education on toxins that I'm giving you is stressing you out and it's making you afraid, I want you to unfollow me. I want you to not be scared because that is worse. than what you're using on your face. You know, get to a place where you can come back empowered and feel that empowerment and not feel that fear, not feel that stress, because that is the most important thing you can do for your health is manage your stress.
That's right. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Yeah. And I think, is one of the episodes you're referring to as stress, is it with Dr. Keneally?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the one that was just so impactful for me. And then the one on fear was that Jamie Winship. I think he was my very first podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. He is. He's really, yeah, he spent a lot of, he was a DC cops and then spent 30 years in the Middle East, literally getting warring sanctions to stop warring and fighting and killing each other. And he takes you through this whole process of releasing fear and not getting caught up in fear and basically talking yourself off the wall like that. I mean, he does it so fast, and he teaches it in such a simple way that you can do that for yourself.
I love that. Everyone needs to listen to that episode.
It's a fantastic episode. Now, I will say that was my first episode. I didn't know what I was doing, but it's still, he was awesome. He was awesome.
That's how I feel when people are like, do you have a video on this? And I did it like 3 years ago and it was one of my first ones. And I'm like, oh, I really don't want you to see that.
Let me redo it real fast.
Another one was the unresolved emotions. And I remember listening to the guy who founded the Hope for Cancer facility in Mexico. I listened to an interview that he gave where he was talking about, by the way, there are treatments available down there in Mexico that are amazing and based on scientific data that are illegal in the United States. So
that's right.
It's a whole other topic.
That's a whole other podcast. Do some research.
I listened to, I mean, it was like a 3 hour long interview and it was so amazing. And one of the things that he talked so much about was, you know, one of the common threads they see in their cancer patients is this childhood trauma or trauma that has been unresolved, and people are storing those feelings. You know, we store our grief in our lungs, we store our anger in our liver. And I know this kind of is sounding a little woo-woo, but these are real things.
They are.
Our emotions are very real and they impact us, and being able to process them thoroughly and get them, you know, out of our body and to not just like shove. There's a reason why we say we have gut feelings, right? We, that upset feeling in your stomach when you know something's not quite right. Like our body tells us how we feel.
Right. It does. And that processing, I think that was Dr. Keisha Ewers. It was an amazing podcast, and she was sexually abused by the principal of her school when she was in elementary school.
Yeah, I remember that story. That was a really hard episode, but really good episode.
Yes. And then there was another one with the founder of Auntie Anne's Pretzels. She was also sexually abused by her pastor. How do you get over those things? You have to try. And I don't like that word try. So let's maybe say, you know, you have to have movement forward. Even a centimeter is movement forward. And there are ways to process. And, you know, and it's going to be different for, you know, for everyone. And depending on, you know, big T trauma, little T trauma.
Yeah.
But there are of course, you know, talking to people, having safe people. Dr. Henry Cloud and I talked about safe people. He's the author of Boundaries. Having those people in your life, but also, you know, that you might need to go to the next level. Maybe it's tapping.
EMDR is a good one.
Exactly right. You know, so there are ways to move through trauma, and we've all been through trauma. And I think the other thing we need to consider is, I mentioned big T, little T. Does it matter if it's big T or little T? It's trauma. And when I think back, and this is something I haven't talked about before, so I might have to mute, but when I had that conversation with Dr. Keneally, and she said, look back to what happened in your life 10 years ago, and that's probably going to be the answer to why you got cancer. And 10 years, honestly, to the month, I had a miscarriage at 3 months. And it was really like it was my last chance to have a baby. And I just did a crappy job processing, because I was just like moving through life barely. And even to this day, if I watch a movie or something and it's about a woman who's having a miscarriage, I have to mute it. I still like, it's too much. And that's probably something I need to take a look at.
That had to have been really hard for you to share just now, but I'm really grateful you did. There's so many women who saw the miscarriage is so common. There are so many women that just heard you say that are like, me too.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, empowering women to say, listen, these things, you know, you and I have talked about my loss, you know, losing somebody tragically in a car accident. And if we don't take the steps to help ourselves, whether it's through therapy or talking to somebody who's a safe person, I did a lot of therapy afterwards, a lot of crying. I'm a big believer that crying is one of the best ways to move emotions. It's so important. Like, don't suppress the tears that are coming out of your body. We cry for a reason. And breathing, deep breathing, taking big, deep breaths and releasing that grief from your lungs. And I have done tapping and EMDR. And we are a culture that almost puts on a pedestal people's ability to pretend that we don't have emotions. And it's so tragic to me.
It's tragic.
And we should have better skills to work through these emotions, because like you said, it all just gets trapped in there and nothing good comes from that. Nothing healthy comes from that.
Nothing good and nothing healthy. And I'm just even thinking about what I just said, that I, you know, might need to mute. Why do I need to mute? I don't need to.
Well, thank you for sharing.
Yeah. Maybe we've all been muted too long.
Oh, yep. Really long time.
Yeah.
Well, since, you know, you're already got some tears flowing, why don't I, the next step, we'll just keep going on that theme of emotions.
I'm clearing it out.
And, oh, by the way, laughter is a really good way to process so emotions.
It is, isn't it? Yeah, I laugh a lot. I make an effort to laugh. I watch the right things. I love The Office. Silly things.
Who doesn't love The Office?
Well, your oldest daughter just turned me on to Schitt's Creek.
Oh yeah, that's another good one.
I don't watch that.
Love a good comedy. I love it. One of the episodes that touched me the most, yeah, gosh, I'm gonna get emotional now, is the one you did with your husband. And I was really happy you did this, because so much focus and attention goes on to the women, right? As it should, right? Yeah. Women are the ones with breast cancer going through treatment, you know, living it every single day. And then, of course, they should be the emphasis. But there are these silent soldiers in our homes that are our husbands that don't get the recognition. And it's not even about recognition. It's about support, what we just talked about, all those emotions. They have their own set of responsibilities and feelings and things that are happening. And I was just so grateful that you opened up your life and shared so vulnerably, and your husband was willing to come on. What made you want to do that episode?
Yes. You know, a couple of things. I had recently had a couple of girlfriends who'd been diagnosed with some pretty serious cancer, stage 3 and stage 4. And they were asking me, I don't know what to do with my husband. And I said, you know what? I'm going to help you, because my husband didn't know how to ask for support. I call him Army Guy. So he's Army Guy, you know?
Do any husbands know how to ask
for
support?
But he's like attack helicopter Army Guy. So he is like super. It's why he's still alive after crashing 2 helicopters. He's a super intense individual, and he just knows how to put everything in a box. That's not helpful when your wife has cancer. And it took a couple of, probably 2 or 3 weeks to get into the oncologist to finally have somebody say, you're not going to die from this. Thank you. You could have told me that on day 1, but that's a whole other episode probably. So I realized once cancer treatment was finished and I had been given the thumbs up, we had the fight of our life. I mean, like, cancer was a fight, but then we had this argument that I thought, oh my gosh, are we going to get divorced? Like, we were so mad at each other. We hated each other for about 20 minutes and it was ugly. Oh my gosh, it was so ugly. And we have a marriage counselor that we see, like we check in because we also work together. So like once a quarter, we're like, hey, let's check in. Are we good? Are we? And so we called her and we're like, we hate each other right now. So we're going to need to get some tools. And she said, so Steve, how did you process Deb's cancer? And he's like, well, I made her dinner. Like what? I folded all the laundry. Not enough. And I didn't see him. You know, I didn't see him because I was busy doing my own thing. Like I said, I had four surgeries. I was on a lot of drugs. I was sleeping a lot. I didn't see him. I didn't see the support that he needed. And he's a dude, right? So he's not going to call up a friend and say, oh my gosh, I'm afraid my wife is going to die.
No, because guys don't do that.
They don't do that. They don't do that. Or my wife has to have her breast amputated. You know, so we did that episode kind of as a public service to let people know, be it a spouse or kids or a best friend or your mom and dad, those people need to get some support. And every person's going to be different, but they're probably going to need to talk to somebody. Now, the great thing about cancer, at least in the US, is for most hospitals, they have social workers available. So that is a good resource. There's also almost every community, and also because of COVID, these classes are online where there's therapy online and there's how to deal with cancer classes if your spouse is in chemo. Like there's all kinds of resources that we just didn't know about because, again, we were so focused on me that we didn't focus on him at all. So I would say that would be my just take a look at this kind of advice is you got to look at the spouse and the kids and the people closest because they're going to need a little assist.
Yeah. I loved that you did that episode. So thank you for that. And it is a public service that you did that.
It's the episode I wish I would have had when I got diagnosed and we would have approached cancer completely differently.
And that will absolutely be one in the show notes. That was episode 17. I wrote it down. Okay. So after all of this, after all the interviews that you've done, and I know this might be really hard to kind of like wrap it up into like a small little bow because it's such a complicated issue. If you were to give somebody any advice on, you know, do these three things, here's the three big things that you can do for yourself right now to reduce your risk of breast cancer. What advice would you give somebody?
You're right. Huge question.
Yeah.
But I've had so many amazing takeaways from my podcast. So I think going back to stress being the master of cancer, honestly, I think dealing with stress, and even if you don't think you have a very stressful life, taking a look at childhood trauma and things that you probably need to process. And when you look at anything in your life, like for me, it's watching or hearing about a miscarriage. It still really lights me up inside. If you have something in your life that you hear about it, maybe you hear about rape or child abuse, and not that those things aren't going to light us up anyway, but if it lights you up more than...
Yeah, triggers you. You've got a big trigger there. You,
then that might be something you need to really take a look at with a trusted friend, somebody who's going to tell you the truth, or a trusted advisor, and you pay somebody to tell you the truth. But those are some things that are my big takeaway. And I, again, back to Lee Erin Keneally's episode, you know, I hadn't thought about cancer growing for 10 years. And so when she told me that, it was a big aha for me that I hadn't really finished processing the multiple miscarriages, but that big one, because we had told people that, you know, I was going to have a baby. So that's when you start to just go, oh, that was a lot. So I would say stress, toxins, oh, Lord have mercy, the toxins in our environment. That is something that you are an expert, and I am starting to get to expert status. Growing up on a farm in the 70s and 80s, Northern California, Roundup was in every corner of our orchard. So it was normal because you went to the feed store and they said, hey, we've got this amazing product that is going to maximize your harvest, and it's going to be great. You're going to make more money. And farmers, it's a rough life.
And yeah, no, it really is.
It was a part-time farm for us. We grew, I'll say almonds for, but I actually say almonds because when you're a farmer, you actually say almonds. And the farmer joke is you got to knock the L out of them to get them down because it's really hard to harvest almonds. So we had almonds and walnuts and we couldn't make a full-time living. So my dad always worked a full-time job. And then, you know, we had the orchards. And so anything to maximize the harvest we had to do. And so I was around a lot of chemicals. And then also growing up in California in the 70s and 80s, we had some sort of fruit fly. And I get a chuckle, but this also really fires me up, is that we would have crop dusters come through our neighborhood. To drop malathion to kill this fruit fly. And then we had to stay inside for 15 minutes.
Because it's gone after that.
And then after 15 minutes, it's killed the fruit fly and it's completely, you know, non-toxic outside, right? And then we go outside and play in the orchards. And I'm sure I was just like so toxin heavy. So that's a big one. And then unforgiveness. Mm-hmm. Forgiveness, I think, was also a big driver for me. I have a tendency to run this tape in my head of, oh, that person hurt me 10 years ago. And so, you know, I have a thing about that person and I just wasn't good at letting things go.
I think a lot of people can relate to that, you know, especially now in this day and age where we were so divided. There's so much divisiveness. There's so much anger. It's not an easy thing to let go and to forgive, but it's powerful.
It is. And forgiveness is something you do for yourself. And that is also, I think, a really key point with forgiveness is forgiveness doesn't mean, hey, I'm going to let you out of jail. Or it is actually, I'm going to let you out of my jail, but it doesn't mean you have to have lunch.
Yeah, right. You can keep your boundaries. Right. You can release yourself of that burden.
You can, because I had a therapist tell me this a long time ago. And they said, when you put somebody in jail, you are the warden. What does the warden do? They're always on alert. They're always packing and they're marching around, making sure everybody stays in their space. I don't want to be a warden anymore. So I've really worked on that forgiveness piece.
I love that analogy. Well, thank you for being here. I beyond appreciate this conversation and I just adore you. And I can't wait to have, you know, meet you in California and have some lunch and go to the Belly Up for a concert and have some girl time.
I know. I'm so glad I met you. And I mean, it's all been online and, you know, thank you, Instagram.
Yeah, right. No, you reached out to me. So thank you.
Thank you. It was just a great morning.
You, my friend, have officially finished another episode of the Detox Dilemma podcast. And if you want more, head over to wendycatherine.com to get all the show notes and links to discount codes from our amazing partners. If you're looking for something specific to help you detox your home, make sure you check out my toxin-free shopping guide at toxinfreeshoppingguide.com. It's organized by category and makes detoxing your home simple. I'll see you next week. And until then, I hope your life is getting just a little less toxic.